Emma Wingfield is a Brooklyn-based writer, researcher, and entrepreneur. She's an expert on West African art and the co-founder of a home decor brand called 5 and 6 Textiles. Along with her co-founder, Lane, the two work with a collective of local artisans in the Ivory Coast to produce gorgeous, ethically made home goods and bags. But how they turn a research project into a company? This is Eureka on Monocle 24. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Each week, we bring you one entrepreneur story, the early inspirations, the struggles, and the path to success. This week, Emma tells her story.
My background is in history of art, and it starts actually with me living in London. I went to UCL, did a master's in archaeology there, and while I was there, I began to focus on West African art. I was always fascinated by indigenous groups and the growth of art out of those areas. I managed an art gallery here in London for a few years, and I was working with contemporary artists. And although I loved that, I was more interested about where there was a group of people working in the same traditions and how that evolves. After that, I made the transition from galleries to museums. And so that's what took me back to the States. I started working at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I was working in the African art department, and I just started researching there. And while I was there, I met a man named Jerry Vogel, who was one of the authorities on art from Cote d'Ivoire. And while I was there, the associate curator, Yael Biro, came up to me and said, "Hey, we're planning this trip to Cote d'Ivoire. We're going to look at artist cultures and artist groups and travel around the entire country and talk to them and see how they're doing after a civil war that lasted for 10 years. I was like, "Oh, that sounds fascinating. I'll come. Yeah, totally." So I hopped on a plane, ended up in Cote d'Ivoire, started traveling around. We were visiting artist workshops, wood sculpture, textiles, pottery. And we were in Corgo, and we went to visit Warrenene, which is this huge weaving co-op. There's 300 members in this weaving co-op. And it was kind of the first time that it really hit me that this is a community that really values this very ancient artistic practice, and they're doing it despite everything else going on around them. So we went back to the hotel, and then the next day, Valley, who's the head of the weaving co-op, came to visit us at the hotel, and he was talking to us, and he said, "You know, do you know anyone in the States or in Europe that would be interested in working with us to broaden our consumer base? Because no tourists come here anymore. We only sell within our community, and that doesn't allow us to really expand. We want to know what people want to buy and what people want to see from our textiles, from what art we can do." And it kind of hit something in me. And I thought, wow, I'm so fascinated about how these practices evolve. But it's so related to being able to have someone to buy this art from them. And if they don't have access to that, what does that mean for their community? Why am I spending time researching and writing about this when I could actually do this? So step one, I got back, still not really sure what I was going to do. That's when I was talking to my good friend Lane Henry, who's my business partner now. She was at the time in children's clothing design. And I was telling her about this amazing meeting I had, and she said, you know, she looked at me and she said, "Emma, this is amazing. This is something, I love this idea, and I love this idea of designing and working with an artist group to create something really amazing." So we sat down, we came up with a business plan. We came up with this idea that we were going to make tote bags. We designed a prototype. We started talking with Warrenene via our business partner Clément in Abidjan. We sent them this document that I had written in French about instructions on how to make this tote bag that we had designed. And we sent it to them. And I said, "Hey, let us know what you guys can do. And then what they sent back was this beautiful tote bag and a bunch of other cloth, a bedspread, napkins, just examples of other types of motifs and patterns that they do. I was away visiting my parents for Christmas, and I came back to this giant box of cloth. And we sat in my apartment, and we tore through the cloth, and we were looking at it and thinking, and just started brainstorming what else we could do. We weren't in this to make ourselves businesswomen. Neither of us have a background in that. But we wanted to make sure that these practices were preserved and could continue to evolve. These trades are passed down from parent to child. And if they can't sell the work, then they're not going to be able to continue teaching their children how to make these types of things, because obviously they want their children to go on and to be able to have a career and to be able to grow. So we were thinking, how can we preserve this and make sure that this is profitable for the future? And we originally thought a nonprofit. That's how we can do it. We can sell this stuff and all the money goes back to them. And then we started talking to other companies that have worked with artist groups in other parts of the world. And one thing that really stuck out to us, we were speaking to this woman in California. She said, the best way to help a community is to make sure that you are creating a business for them, something that will give them work and that they can earn money from, a profit incentive. The best way to be a nonprofit is to be a for-profit business. And that's another light bulb that went off in our heads. And we just thought, okay, we work with them to develop this business. They set the price for what their labor, their products, their resources they need. And then we come back and we sell our line of goods. And then 10% of that goes back to the community, but to the entire community. There, Warrenene is about 15 kilometers away from Corgo, and they have a school there, but that's only up until the age of 12. After that, if the family has enough money to send their child to school in the city, they go to the city, otherwise education stops. They have a health clinic, but they need resources. They need access to other things. And then also there's the tradition of hand spinning cotton, which they used to do. That doesn't happen anymore because the materials that they need to do that are broken. They need them replaced. They need them updated. So we just saw so much opportunity here. And we thought, well, why don't we create this fund? And then we have stuff, we have money to play with. We have a little kind of gold mine of money that we can use directly with the co-op to make this business grow and to make their help their business flourish and their community hopefully flourish as well and preserve this idea and this tradition for their children and for their families. I learned that there's no one way to launch things and that it takes time and patience, and that in those times where you feel like this is never going to happen, that this is never going to grow, that's when the amazing things happen. That's when the great ideas formulate. And my problem solving abilities, I think have soared through the roof at this point, because the obstacles, and especially working with a community that's so far away, and to understand that production doesn't take a few weeks, it takes 3 months. It's okay, and you have to be creative, you have to be inventive, and you can't give up.
Emma Wingfield there, co-founder of 5 and 6 Textiles. Eureka will be back next Friday. We'll hear from PJ Harrison, the Brit who moved to Los Angeles and started a football club with his buddy, who just happens to be the son of Sting. This episode was edited by Toby Hammond. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Thanks for listening.